Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm just going to keep playing with my intonation on that.
I love it.
Why not?
I feel like we've already descended into like delirium and we haven't even started.
So at the moment, we're all finding times a bit tough. And I don't know about you, but I have this tendency to, when I get myself into like a bad mood, when I feel myself getting grumpy, rather than try and snap out of it, I actually like to just like sit in that for a bit.
I know what you mean. You kind of wallow in it. And you kind of make sure you watch and listen to things that is going to make you even sadder.
Yeah, yeah, I do that all the time. And so I had a day like that yesterday where I was miserable. I slept really badly. I did actually get my stuff done for work, so that was one good thing. But I had a Zoom call at 9:30 with some of my colleagues, and then I basically logged off and went back to bed for 2 hours, which you just know is not good when you've had a 2 hour nap before 11 a.m.
Yeah, it's already set for the day, set for like I can't even speak today. I don't know what is wrong with me. Oh my god.
Language has become almost irrelevant. I was talking to my friend on the phone yesterday, and he was saying how he's gone basically days upon days without speaking to anyone. So I talk to myself around the flat. I think I always have. That's not a corona thing.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk to himself. And he was saying that if someone rings him in the evening, at times his voice will initially go like really high and like squeaky because he hasn't actually given his vocal cords a workout.
Oh my god, no, I like a good talking to myself as well. Like whenever I'm like cooking or like walking the dogs and stuff like that, I'll talk to the dogs, I'll talk to myself. Like even if Greg wasn't here, I have like full conversations out loud. I sort of narrate my life.
Yeah, I think that's a way to kind of keep you sane as well. Like, doesn't he sing in the shower?
I agree. Like, how is he not at least singing along to something or saying quotes along to films that you've seen before? Like, it's just how I function. I can't not.
I find it very strange to not be constantly like having a dialogue with yourself.
So
I just had one of those days and I got home and I was like, I was going to watch a documentary about Tiananmen Square on BBC4. And so I turned it on and, you know, straight away there's like just, you know, bloody bodies being kind of shuffled about and stuff. And I was like, yeah, this feels right. This feels right for my mood. But then froze. So instead of sticking with it, I just kind of went back to the menu, and then I found this documentary called Roll Red Roll.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Storyville, so it was in the foreign language documentary part, and it was an American documentary about the Steubenville rape incident. Now, do you remember this when it came out?
Very, very vaguely. I wouldn't be able to pull any details from it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah, so it was basically some teenagers on a sports team had sort of sexually assaulted this girl, and it really kind of went viral because there was a sort of concerted effort to cover up elements of it by the like American football community in the town.
Oh god.
And I just thought it was a good documentary. It was interesting because it kind of explains a lot about small town American culture as like a context to that behavior. And they have this antiques dealer that gets interviewed called Vinny.
Of course. Of course he's called Vinny.
And he's like, well, you know, in my day, we just called that being a naughty boy. I'll throw them in jail. I mean, I don't know. Kind of crazy.
Oh god, I can picture it now. I can literally imagine exactly what you're painting me here.
You know what he looks like, you know what he's wearing, you know he's got sweat patches.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 would still have wandered into his antique shop, you know.
Oh yeah, naturally.
I love more, but yeah, so I don't know. I really kind of wallowed in it. Rather than sitting in the bathtub and listening to Lana Del Rey, I watched the Steubenville a sexual assault documentary, but it was very good. And yeah,
I do love like a good, like a good one sounds weird, but like I do love a kind of like really gritty documentary like that. And I agree, I kind of find like if I'm in a really good mood, I can't bring myself to put them on because I'm like, I can't intentionally crush my mood with something like this and something that's that deep and that heavy. But if I'm already feeling a bit low and a bit flat, I'm just like, oh, now's the time, whack it on.
I like that. So you just take advantage.
Yeah.
You just align your mood to like what kind of cultural content you can ingest.
Exactly. Everything's an opportunity.
So, yeah, all of that to say that I think the documentary was overall slightly less depressing than this episode. No, I actually don't think this was as bad as last week.
I don't. I think the formula worked a little bit better this week. I think because they had like more big mass group gatherings. So there was less like jumping around from like a couple of people and a couple of people and a couple of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the I'm calling them scenelets.
that's
a word because they're not full scenes.
Yeah, there's like a few bits where it's like I sort of write down like where the scene was set and that kind of thing, and I'd start to write notes and stuff, and then the scene would be over and I'd written like three words and I was like, no, it's not even worth covering.
Yeah, I kind of had that quite a lot this episode as well. We open up in bartending school.
I love this. I also think Brett and Dana just seem like the most awkward bartenders ever.
Yeah, Dana constantly looks like she's just looking down on people, which I like as a facial expression. I don't actually have a problem with it, but it wouldn't sort of invite me to the bar.
Yeah, it wouldn't make me want to go and get a drink from her.
No. And why do you think Brett makes a terrible bartender?
I think he just oozes, well, to be fair, actually, he probably makes an exception of bartender because he just oozes that sort of slightly smarmy, feel like he's probably going to look down people's tops as they're leaning over the bar kind of vibe.
Yeah, so ideal. Ideal for him.
Yeah, I was going to say perfect for him. For everybody else, not so much.
What did really horrify me about this scene was Brett was wearing a sleeveless hoodie over a t-shirt, okay, with the hood up indoors.
Oh god, there is a special place in hell for sleeveless hoodies. They're just such an antithesis of fashion. They make no sense. They're not practical nor stylish. There's just no place for them in society.
It's sportswear, which I hate, breeding with a gilet, which I also hate.
See, I don't mind the sportswear element so much, but I also hate a gilet in any capacity.
In any cultural context. Oh,
and hoodies are literally only to be worn if you're a teenage boy or if you're literally in the house and going nowhere.
I completely agree with that assessment. And then Dana's mum taught her how to make a dirty martini at 8 years old.
So that she didn't have to make it herself.
I mean, to me, this was quite a strong case to have a baby.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really thought about it in that respect, but it does save you a lot of time, doesn't it?
Have you seen the giant baby?
No. Sorry, what? You need to elaborate further.
It's doing the rounds on Twitter.
Right.
It's quite horrifying.
Oh, God. Do I need to go?
I think you should look it up right now. Because as I was watching this and as I was thinking, well, you know, having a tiny bartender that you could train up, you know, that's like a tick in the right box.
Yeah.
And also on the other side, I was like, that giant baby that I've seen on Twitter has kind of thrown me back into the ambivalence towards children that I already felt. Actually, it's not ambivalence. It's kind of verging on abject horror, if I'm being honest.
That is the most monstrous baby I've ever seen in my life. I'm horrified. I hate it. I can't look at it. I've had to stop immediately. I'm so uncomfortable. Yeah, so I very much have a disdain for children as well. Like, I'm not child-friendly in any capacity. And that's just officially signed and sealed and closed off my ovary forever.
Consider my fallopian tube.
Yeah.
Family tied.
Oh, sorry.
Go away. Go.
someone had the audacity to knock at the front door and therefore Penelope lost her mind.
Oh. So, yeah, giant baby to me is just another sort of, if I was plotting a graph of everything from cats as a starting point.
Yeah.
The giant baby is just like the latest plot point, you know, downwards in this, in the general trend of this year.
Yeah, no, it's literally, I can't even explain the monstrous nature. That's like, that's going to haunt my dreams forever.
I'm really sorry that you had to see that, but I also had to, I had to pull you into it because I didn't want to be alone in it, you know?
It's always that thing when you see something truly, truly horrifying, you have to share it.
Always.
Sorry.
Yeah, monstrous baby is just the latest symptom of this sick, twisted nightmare that we call 2020.
I already think it's going to outpeg Corona as the worst thing to happen this year.
Strong words.
Oh, but it's just so awful.
I know. It's,
I just don't understand it. It looks so like roided up.
Think about how much more just liquids that would create as well. Oh, I can't believe that.
Oh no. Oh, I can't even think about it.
I think we should capture it, study it, work how to make it never happen again.
It definitely needs some kind of genetic mutation testing.
So then we cut back to Dana's testimonial where she's like, absence makes the heart grow fonder with Max. And then she makes kind of wordplay about how it makes him harder. I think Dana thought that being apart from Max would culminate in some sort of revelation, or that's kind of what she's trying to get across, but it still just felt so stilted.
I know, I thought that too. It felt like such an awkward, jarring kind of thought process that she had. And it was just so obvious that she barely even believed her own words. Do you know what I mean? Like, she was saying these words and you could tell even she was just like, ugh.
I think Dana's humour is very much kind of throwing in vulgar words to be edgy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's almost like that. She wants to be like a slightly laddie kind of humour that makes you really like popular with the guys.
Oh my God, it's literally like lad banter.
Isn't it? It really is. It's like those girls that try and throw it into conversations when it doesn't sound like it comes naturally from them to try and seem more like cool and relatable to the guys.
Yeah, it's always a super hot girl trying to be like, yeah, I'm down with that, you know. Yeah. Like, makes the dick go harder. I don't know. It was a bit cringe.
I just wanted to be like, you're better than this. But I feel like we keep saying this about Dana and we keep being like, you're better than this, you're better than this. And maybe she just isn't better than this. Maybe we're giving her too much credit.
I mean, only time will tell, but this is episode 16.
Is it actually? Are we already at 16?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this feels like the longest season ever.
I know, and still nothing's happened.
I know. I feel like we should be like episode like 3 maybe.
Yeah, still very much in the introductory phases.
Yeah, like setting a bit of a scene, setting up the rest of the season for something really good and exciting to happen. But like, what have we had? We've had Brittany and Jax's wedding, Katie and Tom's half-assed trip to Vegas. I think that's been it.
That's all that I can name.
I mean, obviously we've got Stassi's engagement next week. But then I feel like there's not really much you can do with that. Like, the moment itself will be nice, but then that's it.
Yeah, we'll have to see what the lead up is. We do then go to Stassi and they're playing with our hair extensions. Bo's little vignettes of prop comedy really need to stop if I'm going to continue to give this show a chance.
Like children who can't not touch things.
Yes, and it's like, look, mummy, I'm performing, mummy. Mummy, I'm putting on a show for you. Pay attention to me. I mean, spoken from experience. Obviously.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, I was very much that child as well, especially as an only child. I used to put on the Spice Girls live DVD like video. It would be a VHS at that point, and I would sing along to every song and promptly do costume changes when they did costume changes.
I love that. That's great. I did the same, except for I had like a multi-album of ABBA,
Nice.
and we had like this dressing room kind of area, which was just mirrors from floor to ceiling on like a
Amazing.
sliding wardrobe front, and that was just like the stage, you know?
I'm so heavy into that. That sounds fantastic.
I also choreographed Cats from start to finish. But you know, when you have a lot of alone time, well, you know, what are you going to do?
Exactly. As an only child, you have a lot of time to fill.
I think Beau is an only child.
I think he's got a sister, although he has very strong only child energy.
Okay.
I think so.
There goes my theory.
I know, but he does have a very sort of like only child air about him. And it is that like, mummy, I'm performing. Pay attention to me. You can't speak to other people when I'm here.
Yeah, just constant validation required.
That was just so classic. It's like I still like Beau, like I still really like him, but I do also find that side of his personality so aggravating.
Not as aggravating as Schwartz not recovering the marriage certificate.
I know. I thought that was going to be like a little bit at the end of their episode, and then it'd be like, oh, it's fine. We found it. No, that's fucking gone. So somewhere in the streets of Vegas, there is just their marriage certificate littering the pavement.
It's a visual metaphor that feels apt.
Yeah. And they're like, it's still valid. It's just we have no proof of it. And it's like, oh, good, because that makes all the difference. Like,
That's what really counts.
yeah.
It wasn't even about the certificate. I think it was just about proving some basic level of competency as an adult, you know?
I know. I mean, he's in his 30s. I'm not sure exactly what age he is, but like, come on, dude. If you're old enough to be getting married, you're old enough to be able to hold on to a piece of paper for more than 97 seconds.
It's accountability, which
Yeah.
he just obviously has never grasped.
No, never. It's just.
And then Stassi says that they're not trying for a
Oh,
baby.
I hate when people say this. It's like, right, if you're not using birth control and you're not doing anything about it, then you are trying to have a baby. There's no not trying. Like, oh, I hate this about people.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Stassi's obviously using this as well as some kind of tactic to hurry him along.
Yeah, I think
Does
so.
get pregnant, presumably, you know, that's a strong push in his direction to commit.
Yeah, and you can just see whenever she says these things, Beau looks so wildly uncomfortable. And it's like you can tell she's kind of doing it in this way that like she thinks is coming across as like this slightly jokey way, but you can tell she means every word of it.
I think Beau would be a good dad because he could do all of his little bits for the baby and the baby would love it.
Oh, he would have a captivated audience, and they had to pay attention to him because he spawned them. I think it would be good for him.
The baby wouldn't have yet kind of developed a refined sense of humor. So
Yeah.
basically, a tabula rasa that he can just imprint on really early with his just ridiculous punning, his bad British accents.
Truly, I feel like he is the perfect father figure for many children everywhere.
I bet Beau loves carpool karaoke with James Corden.
Oh, you can tell he does. You can just tell. It oozes out of him.
And then Stassi's explaining that this form of Kristen makes her harken back to season two and three Kristen that slept with Jax and betrayed her.
I understand the kind of like the PTSD flashbacky kind of thing, but I also think Kristen's being a lot more mature and a lot more normal and sensible than she was back then. So I don't really see how she's equating the two.
I think it comes down to whether you think people can change. Where do you stand on that?
See, I'd have found it really hard to forgive her in the first place. Like, I think that's not necessarily something I could have done. And I'm sort of one of these people where it's like I kind of don't hold on to grudges, but I also just think if I'm over you, then I'm over it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or I feel like if you are gonna give them that chance and give them that sort of like forgiveness and be friends with each other again and that sort of thing, then you have to just leave it and let it go. You can't keep referring back to it whenever they do something to piss you off or upset you.
Yeah, you have to build a fence around it and just kind of ring it off and be like, right, that is a no-go.
Exactly. And it's like never gets mentioned again. Or if you don't think you can do that, then don't move on from it and just draw a line under your friendship and call it a day.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think people can change. I think I've changed quite a lot in the past sort of 5 years.
Oh, same. Absolutely.
So, but also, you know, I have also kind of dealt with people that have done things where you don't necessarily want to give them the benefit of the doubt, or you have to see kind of, I think you have to see sustained action to actually believe that they've changed. So yeah. You do have to have that interaction with them to confirm, but at the same time, you can't have that meaningful interaction if you're still keeping them so much at arm's length, if that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. And it is that thing of, like, obviously sometimes when you have like mutual friends, you kind of can get the best of both worlds, where you can not be friends with them, but you can kind of keep an eye on whether they've changed or not. But it also means that you don't get that closure if you do decide that you just want to call it a day and move on from it, which I think is probably what happened here, where it's like they didn't really get the choice of just separating at that point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because they were in this big project together, and
yeah, and they couldn't just kind of one of them walk away. And to be fair, I don't feel like either of them are the kind of ones that would walk away.
yeah, and I completely agree with you that that's probably what happened, but that it needs to come down to now either just saying the past is the past. And I mean, you know, it's not like she's still with Jax.
No, exactly. And I mean, Jack's proved himself to it not just be like Kristen specific, which I think does change the dynamic again.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it was just her best friend. It was like anything that was still long enough.
But I do think it's strange that Bo in this scene is still trying to position himself as Kristen's friend, because I think he needs to accept that he knows where his bread is buttered, that he is basically subservient to Stassi now and knows that she's, you know, the alpha in the relationship.
Exactly. And I think it is just kind of like getting comfortable with that dynamic. Like, obviously we saw it a lot later on in the episode as well, which we'll get to. But I think it is weird that he's still trying to peg him as being like super close to her. Because even before they all started to like fight with each other, I never really got the impression that they were super close.
No, I didn't. But I didn't know that she introduced them.
No, I didn't either. So that was interesting. So I can kind of understand, I guess, why Kristen feels a little bit betrayed as well. Because it's almost like, oh, I introduced you guys. Now you've both just ditched me.
I would totally have her at the engagement. I also think, like you say, you don't have to necessarily interact. But I'm a very strong believer in just be civilized. You know, you don't have to be someone's best friend, but it's not nice to have bad blood with people. And if you can bring yourself to just be in that environment and shrug it off as much as possible and just be friendly, then I think you probably will lead a much easier and a lot happier life.
Yeah, I'm the same. And I kind of think exactly the same things as well, where it's like, unless you've done something that's literally the most god-awful thing to me in the last sort of couple of months, I just think I can't really be bothered either way to sort of be offended and bothered. Like, it just takes so much energy and like drains you to kind of keep going with this narrative of like, I hate this person, this person's bad, I can't be around this person, I can't do this and that. Like, I'm very much like a live and let live. It's like, okay, if you piss me off or hurt me or what have you, it's like, that's fine, I just won't trust you again. But
yeah,
I can be around you, I can be in small settings with you, big settings with you, like, I don't care.
Well, this is the other thing. I think we're quite similar in that we're not sort of shy and retiring wallflowers or anything. And I think we are quite sort of self-assured.
Yeah.
And part of the not wanting to give it energy for me is also like, I don't, whether this is true or not, I don't want you to think I care enough to put that effort in disliking you, you know? So I think over time, I tend to just kind of fade out of those really strong feelings anyway. I don't really have any grudges that have persisted that much, but even people that have really, really upset me, I just get this instinct of like, don't actually let it show that they've upset you, because that shows that they've had an impact on you, and I hate that.
Yeah, no, I'm exactly the same, and I hate that as well. Like, I hate people knowing that they've got to me. I just think, like, in my head, I'm just like, I'm so above this.
Yeah, in my head, I'm like, you know better. Like, you know you're better than this. It's the vulnerability thing. I mean, it's just a classic.
It is.
Absolutely. It's such a cliche.
But I do feel like it works. I think it works really well as like a coping mechanism.
It does, because you also start to buy into it. So if you do start someone out, eventually you won't care.
Yeah, if you kind of say it enough to yourself and you sort of start to believe it and just take on that feeling anyway. So I think it kind of kills two birds with one stone.
Yeah, you start to buy into your own hype.
Yes. And your own bullshit.
I was kind of thinking about Stassi and Beau's relationship dynamic, and it doesn't bother me at all that Stassi is the alpha. I don't think your gender should define your place in the compromise that is a relationship, but I do see it as unhealthy when you kind of forsake all others for your partner.
Yeah, I do as well. I don't think they should be like I agree they should be pretty high up in the, you know, the totem pole of importance. But I also don't think that they should be the be all and end all. Like, other people should still be taken into account. And it's like the same people that just like get into a relationship and stop bothering with any of their friends. Like, yeah. I hate that. I would hate to do that myself. I would hate for like Greg to have done that with his friends. Like, I just find it really uncomfortable, because I'm also one of these people where if I spend too much time with somebody, I just get incredibly sick of them.
Yeah, I think it leaves you in a really bad place if things do go wrong, if you fail to maintain that more kind of broad support system.
I do as well. And it's like, I think it's that important difference of having like combined friendship groups, but also having friends outside of each other as well.
Yeah, completely independent of each other.
Yeah, so it's like I've got all my friends like I've known for like so long and stuff, but I have like friendship group that's kind of my core immediate best friends that is also like Greg's a part of, but I also have like a group of girlfriends outside that, and obviously me and you are completely independent from that and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's nice having your own stuff happening and your own people to go to that aren't a part of your relationship as well.
Yeah, and someone to give you an external point of view on things that might be happening within that. And it's not about, you know, going off and bitching about your partner, but it is just about the different ways that people approach situations or interpret them.
Yeah, and it's just being able to think, like, to vent in a kind of unbiased and unjudgmental place as well, or like to somebody who doesn't feel like they've got an obligation to be fair or one-sided.
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing that bothers me with this Beau situation is that I don't think he's actually taking Stassi's side because he thinks it's the right side to take. I think he's taking it because he doesn't want to upset her, cause her stress, and that just doesn't really sit right with me.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important difference. Like, it's one thing to side with your partner if you know they're in their right. And it's another thing to say, I think you're completely wrong, but, you know, I'll be supportive. I'm not going to fall out with you over this, but I don't think you're right. And then it's a whole other thing to just be like, I think you're wrong and I think it's bullshit, but I'm just going to bend over backwards to whatever will and whimsy you please.
Completely.
Which I think is definitely what's happening here.
Yeah. And then we go to Sir. Peter, okay. Peter, to me, has the hairstyle of the little Catholic schoolgirl, Madeleine. Do you remember those books?
Yes.
Like Madeleine in Paris. It's literally a long bob. It's a lob. It's sort of very sleek.
The flicks at the end.
Flicks at the end. Now, to me, I think you either need to go just full on Jack Sparrow, swarthy, shoulder length, you know, a bit grunge with it, or cut it short, because what he's got going on right now with the kind of Kermit voice is just such, it's an upsetting combination.
He just exists like physically and just as a human being. He just exists in this weird in-between space of everything, doesn't he? He's neither one nor the other of anything at all.
Purgatory.
Yeah. Purgatory is just spending time with Peter.
In an empty Sir restaurant.
Oh God, the hell.
And so Sheena comes in to talk to Lisa. Sheena got 7 eggs from her egg retrieval, which I was happy to hear. That sounds like a good number.
I think that was nice as well. And it was nice that they sort of included that.
Yeah. Again, they should be focusing on it a bit more, I think. But
yeah, I think it would have actually been a really interesting storyline that this season has rapidly lacked.
Yeah, I think Sheena is so deeply entrenched in the boy crazy storyline that that's kind of the only ever edit she's going to get.
Yeah, which is kind of unfortunate because she did something that would have been so good, but, you know.
it is so funny. I do really like the Sheena boy crazy because I think we've all been there at some point, and, you know, when you just get very kind of centered around that one thing.
Yeah. You kind of just, it becomes your own narrative, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. And then she tells Lisa that none of the guys, Max or Brett, called her after surgery, which is just so deeply shitty of them.
Isn't it? I just thought this was, it was just such a classic example of basically everything we've been saying about the, especially the new guys, that they're just this kind of like shallow, vacuous non-entity.
And yeah. And that men that say they want to just be friends with you, like a lot of the time they then don't go on to treat you like a friend, you know. Yeah. I think people don't realize that being friend zoned, like you are still technically a friend.
Yeah, it's not like they've like completely like pied you off forever and that's just it and your whole human interaction is over. It's like you still got to treat them like a friend. Like if that was one of the guys, I'm sure they would have rang and been like, oh, you know, how you doing, bro? Is everything all right, bro? It's like, just fucking send her that. She'd have been thrilled to have that text, quite frankly.
I know, it takes 10 seconds out of your day. It's a medical thing. And
it's
again,
I
think...
life thing.
It's a life thing, yeah. It's a life event. And, you know, she obviously positioned herself as being, or thought that she was, relatively close to them, so...
Yeah. I think it must have been really shitty for her as well to kind of have that, like... She'd obviously sort of convinced herself a little bit, kind of what we were saying, where she convinced herself that they were just best friends. They were all just best friends and everything was fine. And best friends, best friends. And then something that's so huge and serious like that, and obviously not one of them bothered to, like, check in. It's probably been a bit of a harsh, horrible shock for her as well to realise that, oh, just because I say it enough times doesn't mean it's actually true.
Yeah, it's a complete reality check. And I think... as well, just on a personal level, like through this whole situation, the people that are checking in or the people that are staying in touch and the people that aren't, like, it does tell you quite a lot, I think.
Yeah.
And I just feel when it's stuff like this, when it's medical, big life events, coronavirus, whatever, it's not about boyfriend, girlfriend, dating, not dating, sleeping together, not sleeping together. It's just about being considerate and human and friendly. So I think you do get quite a good measure of a person in times like this.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. And it's that thing, it's like, it's just trying to find that group of people that you have where, you know, you don't necessarily have to be speaking all the time and that kind of thing, but you know that they're like fundamentally there for you, which I don't think Sheena really has.
No, she seems to flit about quite a lot. And that's why when you texted me and said she had a boyfriend, they're 7 months in, I was so happy for her.
I know. I mean, he is not what I would have put her with at all, but I'm very happy with her.
I mean, he's an athlete.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. That is true.
I'm not into the kind of Viking look personally, but...
No, it's one of those funny things. I think you have to kind of have a specific vibe to pull it off. And I think he looks a bit Jason Momoa-y. Like wannabe.
Yeah.
And it kind of just doesn't, I don't know, it kind of comes off as like he's trying to make it a look rather than it just having hair. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you have to fully commit with tattoos or...
Yeah, and it just feels a bit like, oh, I've seen this really hot guy on the internet have this, so now I'm going to have this because it'll make me a really hot guy on the internet.
And then Lisa says, regarding the guys texting her, that she can't expect that from men. And I totally disagreed with her on this as well.
I know. I mean, it did make me laugh that she's like, you can't expect that from men unless they're your husband. And then when you're your husband, you can't expect that either. I mean, I do woefully disagree with her, but so
and
Lisa.
You know that Ken is like such a good husband.
I know. Ken is a great husband.
I believe that Ken got his womanizing out of the way early on in his life. And when he met Lisa, that was it.
I do as well. I can't imagine like Ken ever being in some kind of like cheating scandal or anything of the sort. Like he's just so like wholesome. I love him.
So then this scene, I Sheena heads over to Dana's. She's been involved in some kind of pedestrian collision. I didn't really understand. Was she skating or rollerblading or?
I don't know. I couldn't really grasp like the scenario of the story. I just love that she's like, oh, my Chanel saved me.
Yeah, I can't picture her on a skateboard. I think she must have been rollerblading.
Yeah, she strikes me as a rollerblady type because I think she loves the idea that she can dress up in the leotard and that kind of thing. Like little denim shorts, you know what I mean, on the boardwalk.
I can picture that with such clarity.
Can't you?
And then I also love the line that the doctor doesn't want her to do any twerking.
Yeah. Can't do anything active, you know, like twerking or clubbing.
That was just the go-to.
I know, the immediate first thought, not like sports or anything physical, like heavy lifting. No, I can't twerk in the club.
You know that Sheena's quality of life is significantly affected by that revelation, though.
Oh, it absolutely has been. Everything that she knows to her core can no longer happen.
So Sheena explains that she's offered to get a psychic to connect Dana with her mother if she wants it.
Yeah. How did you feel about this?
So I felt awful for Sheena in this scene.
I wanted to cry for her.
It honestly made me feel physically ill.
Yeah.
To the point where even just recounting it, I think it's just because I've been in situations that uncomfortable before where I've screwed something up and it's the most horrendous thing, but I've screwed something up without realizing, you know, it's
yeah. Just,
it's such a horrible feeling. I think she was completely well-intentioned, but I think given that they aren't particularly close, I can also understand Dana's reaction to it. I think Dana was a bit too harsh. But, you know, I haven't lost a parent, so it's hard to understand how you would anticipate it. What were your thoughts?
So I completely agree with you. I do think Dana was a little bit harsh on Sheena for it. Like, I can understand having this bigger version to it. And I do agree that even if she'd been willing to try it, I don't think Sheena was the right person for her to do that with. But I do think that she was quite harsh on her because you could tell that Sheena genuinely meant it as like a really like massive olive branch to like their friendship. And obviously it just so backfired. And I wanted to cry for her because you could tell she was genuinely like mortified that she'd missed the mark so much.
My face was flushed.
Yeah, I was. I was like uncomfortable watching it, like not in that kind of like cringy embarrassing way, in that like I want to die for you.
Yeah, it was super uncomfortable to watch. And again, yeah, I just when her voice started like wavering a bit, I was just like, oh honey.
I know. But then she does, and it's kind of what Dana says later on in the episode, where Sheena does like make it harder for herself because she lies about things. Like, and you could tell that she was just trying to backpedal about the psychic already being there when she realised she'd fucked up. But yeah, if she had just been like, I'm so sorry, I completely missed the mark. Like, I did invite her here, but I'll go get rid of her now. It's fine. No pressure at all. I just wanted her to be here if you did. Like, that's all she had to say. Instead of like, no, I never gave her your address. I never told her this. And then she could literally hear her talking to her out the window.
Yeah. Shishu does not make
no.
So then we go to Villa Rosa. I'm so glad that we've just wrapped up to it. I never want to speak of that again.
Never. It will never be mentioned. That and Giant Baby can go in a locked box together.
So we go to Villa Rosa. Lisa is hit. I'm struggling to speak as well. Lisa's holding the most hideous mug I've ever seen. You don't get to have a house like that and a mug game that is so weak.
My eyes were drawn to the embroidered jiggy cushion that she has on her sofa.
Oh, I did like that.
I did as well, like the tapestry version.
The bio tapestry.
See, that felt very on brand, but that mug did not.
This was another scenelet, essentially. We then briefly flipped to Stacey at the gynecologist, which was somewhat unnecessary, I think.
It did feel like a scene that didn't need to be seen, especially because it was literally just like, yeah, your cervix is fine, uterus is fine, up you get. And it was like, did that need to be in?
Yeah, I mean, if Bo says that Stassi is getting a checkup, then I think we can take his word for it.
Yes, that's all we need.
And so Lisa thinks that Kristen should get invited to the engagement after party.
Yeah. And I just, I do really understand, but I also can imagine how hard it is for Bo to be in that position because he knows how, like, vehemently, like, Stacey is not into Kristen at the minute. And it's that risk of, like, completely ruining that day for her versus them two making friends in the future and looking back and being sad about it.
I'm not sure what the solution is because Stassi is just so volatile.
Yeah, to be fair, I think if I was Bo, I don't think I would invite her. And I think further down the line, if they did make up and did become best friends again and all that, it's like, you can kind of hold your hands up and just be like, if I'd invited her at that point, you would have lost your shit. Like, let's be real.
That's true. That's true.
And then it's like, it's on them. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if they want to be, well, if Stassi wants to be petty about it, then she has to put up with the fact that she would miss out on having Kristen at these big life events because she didn't want her there right now.
Yeah, I suppose if you want to be on the right side of history with anyone, you're going to prioritize your partner that you're potentially spending the rest of your life with over, like, a friend.
Yeah. Especially if it is something as big as, like, a proposal. Because can you imagine, like, that proposal and then you go to the party and somebody that at that moment in time you literally loathe is there? I'd be livid, to be fair.
Okay. Yeah, when you put it like that, I start to empathise a bit more.
Like, I don't think Stassi's right to be this hateful and anti-Kristen, but considering she is, I think it's probably the safer choice all round.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about if they invited a girl that my boyfriend at school cheated on me with, and this is years ago, and I didn't even like him that much, you know. Okay, fair enough. We then go to some nightclub with the youngsters, the new cast.
That club looked like my worst nightmare.
Do you know what it reminded me of? There's the mad go-go dancing work happening in the background. Yes. Do you remember in the Inbetweeners movie when they end up at the male, like, strip?
Decadent.
It's Fernando. That is what that made me think of.
Do you know, that is genuinely all I could think of as well. It was just such a bizarre, like, homoerotic gay club, but not gay club. I didn't know where to place it. I didn't know what was happening in it. It was a whole mishmash of things.
Lots of feather headdresses. It had shades of Notting Hill Carnival.
It did, didn't it? It was very carnival-esque. I could also see a bit of, like, New Orleans kind of vibe in there. Mardi Gras type of thing.
Yeah. Charlie thinks that Brett would cry after sex.
I cackled at this. So I think she's so on the money. And, like, I'm not a big Charlie fan, but I think she also has the best measure of Brett ever.
I think Charlie is snappier than Dana.
Yeah, I do as well. I think she's got the shady little one-liners down to a fine, perfected art.
She actually feels less try-hard to me.
Yeah, me too.
Which is shocking.
I know. I thought she was going to be, you know, mini Sheena again, really trying to sort of be seen one way. But I just genuinely get the feeling from her that she just doesn't give a fuck, which I do like.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And I think, again, she could be part of a good cast. I think Danica could be as well.
Yeah, I think if they just got past all these weird flaky storylines and kind of trying to, like, jam them into situations that they don't really belong in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crowbarring stuff in.
Yeah, it feels a bit sort of like strong-armed into places that they probably don't need to be in. Like, if they just made it, even if the episode was basically 50-50 of new cast and old cast, it would be fine. But it's this weird, like, trying to force them into, like, group settings with the old cast where you could tell, like, none of them are really that much, like, friends, and it just feels weird.
It's like the multiverse episode of Family Guy where you've got all of these different timelines.
Yeah.
Kind of existing on one.
Yeah, and there's just so much happening.
So they're bringing out, like, bottles with sparklers and everything through the crowds. And this just reminded me, do you have those points in life where you're like, oh, like, I have changed or I have displayed some personal growth and like this is the mark of it.
Yeah.
So there was just this moment that I had a few summers ago where I went to my friend's bachelor party, Hendu, and we went down to Bournemouth by the sea, and we were in like a nightclub in a booth in the evening, and they came out with the bottles and sparklers, and everyone in the booth around me was like squealing, and I just couldn't find it in myself to squeal at like, you know, breakers with a sparkler coming out of it. And that was just one of those moments where I was like, I don't know if it was my inner child dying.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know why, but you know when you're just like, okay, like my trajectory is different now.
Yeah, I'm firmly closing a door on this part of my lifestyle.
It was a reset.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean. And I've never really been like that kind of like club kind of a girl either. Like it's really hard, obviously I went to private school, but I was always a bit of a goth, so I went to like goth clubs and it was all like sticky floors and I got to wear trainers and therefore cannot walk in heels because I didn't have the rite of passage that you have between the ages of about 16 and 21 where you insist on stilettos that you can't walk in, and I feel like it eventually makes you better at heels, but I can't do it because I just went straight out in trainers.
Yeah, you see, you need to break into the stiletto vibe. My feet actually hurt if I don't wear heels for a couple of days. So,
really?
Yeah, I think it's because I have super arched feet. But do you know what scene I was into? Because you're going to love this.
Oh my gosh.
It's the least me thing ever. So my clubbing style when I was at school was like drum and bass and dubstep.
Amazing. Oh, I love that for you.
Yeah, that was strange times. But we also had like a typical like tacky club called the U where we would go and we would get like bottles of really crap champagne like Grey Goose and Red Bull and stuff. So I did also have that side, but
yeah,
I preferred as a general rule the more like ravey ones.
Yeah, see, I never went in the ravey route. I did kind of like get a little bit into sort of like dubstep and things like that, but it was more kind of like by proxy and osmosis of like all my friends around me who started to go that way, and I sort of did it for a bit, and then it was like I got more into like, I don't know if you've been in the cut where it's like R&B and hip-hop and rap, and I was like, that's much more my scene.
Oh yeah, I've never been to the cut. I need to. There are so many clubs in Newcastle I've never been to.
The last time I went to the Cut was about 3 years ago, and I bought a drink and I stood with my friend and I looked around and I was like, I'm the oldest person in here by about 5 years.
Like, oh my God, I would definitely bump into my students there.
Yeah, you would.
Probably best to stay away.
Oh God, honestly. And you know, you just like, you drink, and I was like, I'm too old now, it's happened. The ship has sailed.
Yeah, pubs greater than clubs, we can all agree.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it was actually quite funny to watch this scene because it's been just so long since I've been in that kind of environment.
Yeah, me too. And it felt kind of almost alien.
Yeah.
It felt almost as alien as like watching Lisa Swan around Villa Rosa. The two felt very disjointed.
Yeah, I also very much relate to James because James is obviously sober in this environment, which is difficult for anyone. I mean, let alone someone who's genuinely struggling with alcohol issues. I can't be sober in a club.
I know. I used to do it when I was like a little bit younger, like not long after I passed my driving test, and I'd be quite skinned. So I would just drive to nights out, be sober, and then come home. But it was just never the same.
No.
My desperation to be out and like not in the house with my friends outweighed the severe awkwardness and tedium that is standing sober in the middle of a club while everyone around you is drunk.
I think you have to be at least tipsy. I'm not saying slaughtered, but tipsy is good because otherwise you just start to think about all the bodies and the sweat. That's my Virgo energy coming out.
No, I'm very much like, don't want people to touch me, don't like people knocking into me, can't abide it.
I just don't like when the music is so loud you can't have a conversation, you end up shouting and giving yourself a headache.
I've reached that point as well, and like it just gets exhausting trying to shout all the time, and I just can't handle it anymore.
So James says that he was reaching to drink a destination that doesn't exist.
Yes.
Brett loves to wear a shirt with more buttons open than should be okay.
And he's wearing a necklace. All their club outfits were truly atrocious, by the way. Even the girls.
Yeah, some more chaps making an appearance.
Yeah, everything was very, like, bandage, cut out, like, not much about it, no design or styling or fashion, and it was just like, ugh, ugh.
It was very predictable.
It was exactly what I expected from them, to be fair.
So Brett ends up pulling Danica away to have a talk. Danica is kind of being quite weird about the whole thing. I think she's really doing her best to be messy and she's trying really hard, but it's just really difficult for her to actually get her claws in because it's just a weak storyline.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if she had something like Meteor, I think she'd be great villain potential, but also just great TV. But I think this is just such a like high school wishy-washy storyline of like, well, she said that you liked him and that he likes you and oh, blah, blah, blah. And you can tell that even she's like eye rolling at it and she's bored of it.
Yeah, she said that you're thirsty and whatever. Like, I think they should take the new cast, make them go on vacation, just like lock them in a villa for 2 weeks. Do you know what I mean? Just let them create their own chaos.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it would make much better viewing.
And so Dana again picks up on this whole thing that Sheena has a problem with lying. And I think we can all kind of agree.
Yeah, I mean, she did kind of hit the nail on the head with that one where she said, like, she gets so worried about what people think about her that she just lies to try and make it better. But then it's the lying that actually makes people dislike her.
Yeah, I don't think she's two-faced. I don't think she's malicious, but I think... No, I think she is two-faced, sorry. I don't think she's malicious about it, but that's also why she's not much of a girl's girl.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I sort of sympathise a little bit, because I think especially when I was like younger and kind of like high school, teenager-y, I was a bit the same where I was so afraid of like hurting people or upsetting people that I would just be like, oh, it's easy just to tell them what they want to hear. And then it would just trip you up later in life. So it was like one of those things where it's like I learned fairly early on as a teenager. I think when you're meant to learn these things, that doesn't work.
Yeah, and a big part of adulthood is being able to own up to things, but also being able to like manage expectations. And
yeah,
I also think that Sheena is so that friend that ditches you as soon as she gets a love interest.
Oh, 1,000%. You will never hear from her again until they've eventually broken up with her.
Yeah. But then when you do hear from her, it's going to be like non-stop messages. Can I ring you? I'm so upset.
Yeah. Or like, I really need to go out. Guys, we need to go out. We haven't been out in so long. And it's like, well, we've been out. You just haven't been with us.
That's so true. That's so true. We then flit to the studio. James and Lala are going to jam. There's some heavily auto-tuned moments.
Oh, there is.
Over
solo parts, which I just found jarring. I don't know what it is, but I just find the studio scenes like really, really cringy. Like I feel like it's really hard to watch, and I don't know what it is. And I don't know if it's because like I'm so used to James being like, "Oh, I'm the white Kanye," but like I think he's actually a good producer, and I think, from what I can tell through the auto-tune, Lala seems like a sort of competent singer.
Lala's a very good singer, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's more like a stylistic choice, the auto-tune. I think they're going for that, like, club beats kind of vibe.
I just wanted to die when, when James is like, this is so Kanye, this is so Kanye. And I just wanted to be like, stop talking.
Do you know what, also this is such a cringe thing about solo cups, and this is like the most private school thing ever, but at my old school, like when people had house parties, like we were all, obviously you would get like American films and American TV, and so American culture was always like the overriding thing that, like, because it was before Netflix and stuff.
Yeah.
And people would literally order, like, specially online at, like, insane prices, the American solo cups, just so, like, your house party could have that, like, American feel. And this was literally like a selling point to the party. It was like, yeah, like we got red cups, blah, blah, blah. And they'd be literally paying, you know, like 15 euros for 10 solo cups. It was just so ridiculous.
The wildest thing. I mean, saying that, Greg built us a beer pong table. And we have like a little stash of like solo cups that we keep purely for beer pong.
That's amazing.
But yeah, I can't imagine. I think we got like a pound from Wilkinson's.
Well, yeah, exactly.
This is importing them.
Well, this is basically people like importing solo cups just to like brand their house parties being more Americanized.
That is both exceptional and wild at the same time.
Yeah, you have to respect it, but. So Sheena joins them and she does acknowledge that she puts like an embarrassing amount of effort into her friendships. And then Sheena and Dana sort of make up in a really kind of flat, arbitrary way.
I think Dana has this weird thing where it's like, I like that Dana is very direct and she's like, you've done this, it's pissed me off. And then Susie apologizes, like, right, that's it, like it's squared away. Which I do like in that it's not in this kind of like messy drama, drag it out sort of thing. But I also just agree, it was very flat and very like going through the motions of it. You could tell that the producer had been like, I want you two to sit outside and hash this out. And both of them were just like, I'm so over this.
And this is an alley that has really seen the golden days.
Oh, it's seen some things.
And I just felt really sad the way it's been demoted to these little kind of quasi meaningless scenelets.
We need justice for the alley. It deserves so much more.
It does. I mean, I was grateful that they incorporated it back into a scene because it hasn't been getting a lot of airtime, and I want to know that it's getting paid for the episodes it's appearing.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's earning its keep.
I wonder if it has an IMDb.
Yeah, I bet it does.
So then we go to the Witches of WeHo wine party sort of storyline thread. Kristen has been more than pulling her weight for the Witches of WeHo wine brand, I think.
I feel so bad for her taking on like everything by herself, because it's like, yeah, fair enough if you want out when the contract's ended. But until that contract is ended, you're still very much an equal partner in this and therefore have to pull your weight.
Yeah, and Stassi has so much more influence really than the other two without even needing to try.
She does. I mean, she absolutely does. I mean, even not just like in the business, like the industry, but just like social media and like fans of the show and that sort of thing. It's like she pulls a lot more fan favorite than either of the other two do. So they really do need her to sort of be trying.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, well, you're making money off it too, you know, so
It's not like you've just been dragged into this to help.
Yeah, do it purely selfishly, you know.
Yeah, the better you do it, the more money you make off it, and then the easier it is to bow out of your contract at the end.
I was moderately tickled when they did the little montage of the reporter interviewing them and the way that they were answering, and then it was kind of flicking back to all their screaming
like matches. When they were screaming at Sandoval's extra party, and it was just like, you just have different ideas about everything. I think we agree on everything business related.
Yeah, that was kind of fun, I guess.
I enjoyed that. I did enjoy that.
And so Danica floats the softball concept with Sandoval.
Oh, I mean, they're really just grasping at straws for storylines now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like they're literally manufacturing a competition.
A situational.
Yeah, which has been done to death in sitcoms and comedies alike for years.
Yeah, I think I feel bad about this podcast sometimes because I feel like we comment so much on just like the construction of the episode, like so many like editor's notes, you know, but it's kind of like we can't comment on the content until there is more content.
Exactly, because at the minute it's like the content is like you say, arbitrary apologies and then some people dancing in a club and they have a bicker about something that's been done to death and then that's it and the episode's over.
Yeah, and then just Brett being slow. Yeah.
Brett just existing.
Ugh, enough to piss me off.
Yeah.
So then Dana catches up with Max. I would really like Dana to stop calling things dope.
Oh, I would as well. It's so uncomfortable. It's so cringy.
Max wants to be civil with Dana, but he doesn't want to be friends with her.
Yeah, I think he's just like, I think he's kind of just very over it now. Do you know what I mean?
He seems completely checked out of everything, including the show.
Yeah, he feels like he sort of goes through the motions of actually participating, but you can tell there's not real any conviction behind it.
I really like drunk Ariana.
I love drunk Ariana.
We need more drunk Ariana.
We need more Ariana in general. I think she's my favorite, but drunk Ariana is truly just something to behold.
I love her. I think the people that don't like her are like the hardcore fans that love this show unironically.
Yeah.
And are kind of completely averse to any character with any kind of depth or intelligence. Yeah.
Because Ariana does have a lot of depth and she has a lot of like normalcy about her as well.
And what I love about her and Sandoval's relationship is that it's not a straightforward relationship. And like they do have these fundamental differences, but they seem to work so well in spite of all of them. And I just think, again, it's such a mature and kind of grounded example of how to be with someone.
It really is. Because I mean, the difference between obviously like Ariana not wanting to get married and Sandoval being like very into the idea of marriage and stuff like that. And it's like, I like that they can talk about it. And I like that they can say, well, what can we do to compromise on this? How do we get around this? And I think they're so supportive of each other as well. And not in that blind way that like Bo's supportive of Stassi. I think they're so like fundamentally like to the core supportive.
Yeah.
It's like the episode where Ariana was discussing like her depression and stuff and just like, my heart was, like, breaking for her when she was, like, sobbing on Tom after she'd been speaking to Lala and Stassi.
Yeah, I think Tom is a really good person. And I think I can see him being a family man, but I can also see that he loves Ariana to a point that maybe that is a compromise he's willing to make, you know? And not, it's his to make. And if he feels that he can do that, and forfeit it, you know, maybe he's just going to be the uncle, or maybe he's the godfather.
Exactly. And I think it's like, it's nice that they've kind of, they have compromised on things and he's not trying to push her into doing it, but also that he's just accepted that if he wants to be with her, then that's just how it's going to have to be.
I just think they're great
together. I do as well. I love them. I'm a big Sandoval and Ariana fan.
I do hope as well that James and Lala manage to stay friends, because I think now that they are both sober, like they are good for each other.
I agree.
Do you think that Lala still has feelings for James or vice versa?
See, I think James always has a little bit of a soft spot for Lala. And I think Lala has more of a kind of like, I don't think she has like romantic feelings for him. But I think there's something about James that like she says, like she can't stop caring about him or being his friend, no matter what he's done and that sort of thing. Like, it's weird. I don't get like romantic vibes from them.
No, I don't know. I'm undecided on this one. James, I just can't really, I don't get like any sexual energy from him, but I think that's because I find him objectively just not a particularly attractive man.
Yeah, he's just a bit repulsive on many levels.
And also I think because he's with Raquel and they just don't have that kind of dynamic where you can, I mean, we talked about that last week. Oh, you just can't really picture it getting sexy. So. No.
Not even a little bit. And like, even Raquel was like, oh yeah, we have like drunk sloppy sex. And I was like, I can't even fathom that. Like, oh no. They seem like the least sexual beings in the world.
And then, oh, so then we kind of get to the bit where Stassi is getting really het up about Bo asking some, again, I thought fairly reasonable questions about the situation. So he's just trying to work out what the best course of action is.
Exactly. And even if she, like, obviously she didn't know that he was planning her proposal party and stuff like that, like, even then they're completely innocuous questions that, like, any normal person would ask their other half in that situation. Like, do you think you'll be friends again? Like, how would you feel about her? Like, do you not think this, that, and the other? It's like, that's just a conversation. Like, he doesn't just have to blindly say, yes, Stassi, I think you're right, Stassi. Whatever you say, Stassi. It's like, no, he's allowed to ask questions and try and figure out how you're feeling.
Yeah, because that's also then going to inform how he goes forward with things.
Exactly.
It was odd to me. She starts weeping. He then has to placate her again. And then Kristen is talking to Beau, I think, at the bar, and she says, so you can't be my friend because Stacy doesn't want you to be.
Yes.
And then Stacy kind of comes up and really starts going in on Beau, saying things like, do you want to run after her? Are you that upset? And again, it was that shades of like gaslighty.
Yeah.
Kind of behavior to me.
I found that really uncomfortable to watch as well. Like, I was pleased that Beau actually stood up to her and he didn't pander to her and tell her what she wanted to hear, because it was nice to see him have like a little bit of backbone with it. But I just think she was so wildly out of place to be like, why would you want that? Who would you, like, why would you want to go after her? You go after her. Am I not your person, Beau? Am I not your person? And just this like escalating, screechy, shrill volume at her business event, which is so inappropriate.
Yeah, and the way that she's going, I can't believe you're doing this to me right now. And I was kind of like, look, Stassi, he was having a calm conversation. You were the one that marched over to that and started shouting.
Exactly. And even then, she went storming over to that conversation. Obviously, had already in her head fabricated that it was like they were bitching about her, or that it was like against her, or whatever. When Beau was actually saying, like, well, no, I do have to take Stassi's side, and I'm sorry. And Beau was actually essentially doing what Stassi'd been wanting him to do, and yet she still flew off the handle with him about it.
Yeah, I also thought it was really good that Kristen extricated herself. Again, this was to me a sign of like Kristen's personal growth, like a sign.
Oh, me too.
She's going to be slinging mud at this launch of her own brand.
Yeah, and you could tell she really cares about that brand as well.
I mean, I just love how the whole like message of it is so null and void now.
Yeah. I know, but no, I agree. I was quite surprised when Kristen removed herself, but like you say, it was a really good sort of symbol of like personal growth that she's had.
Do you believe this argument, or do you think it was done to kind of create some drama?
I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if it was just fabricated for the drama and for the TV, and to sort of make their, you know, the lead up to their engagement a little bit more, I don't know, exciting or something.
Yeah, to add in some tension.
Yeah, but I also just think Stacy does have a tendency to behave that way. So it wouldn't surprise me also if this was just purely her being bratty and vicious.
I'm undecided. I think the escalation of it was disjointed, but like you say, she's kind of done this sort of thing in the past, so
like I don't know if it was just bad editing the way that it kind of came across, because it did look jarring, like the kind of 0 to 100 sort of escalation. But it's that thing, it's like I don't know if that was just because it wasn't real or because they edited so much out in between those scenes. It's kind of hard to tell.
And so we get the preview for the next week. Now, again, Lisa participating in the softball game.
I mean, she was getting stuck in there in her jewel tone shirt and jeans on the softball pitch. And also, there was like a clip of Brittany in that next week's episode, and I genuinely had forgotten that Brittany was in this.
Yeah, she wasn't in this entire episode.
Maybe they were on a honeymoon or something.
Ah, could have been
when they were like filming this bit.
Yeah, possibly. Do you have the proposal to look forward to next week?
We do. I am actually excited to see this. I love how much Lisa can't cope with the fact that Beau's proposing in a mausoleum. Like every time he mentions
in a mausoleum.
Yeah. Like every time he mentions it, you can see Lisa like visibly recoil.
Is he in a cemetery or is he in a mausoleum showroom, but like an outdoor showroom?
Sure, because he did say they were going mausoleum shopping, which is obviously his cover, but
which is just
bizarre.
pretty funny in and of itself.
I mean, what a date to go on.
Do you know what? All I'm going to say is, in the grand scheme of proposals, it's going to be the Krusty Krab, wherever it was that Jax proposed to Brittany. Wasn't that like a crab shack?
It was. And it was like the most unintimate, blasé thing ever. And I mean, I get that it was special because of his dad, but like, dude, you could have hired it out or something.
Yeah.
Like, there was just random people trying to enjoy their crab sticks there.
People just milling around.
Oh, God. But yeah, I think it'll top that one.
What I am excited for, though, is tonight watching Roni.
Oh, my God, I'm so excited.
I'm trying to avoid Twitter so much because I don't want any spoilers, but
it seems well,
to be a really good episode.
Well, the thing, I follow Leah on Instagram, and she's been posting like loads of stuff about obviously her like naked tiki torch throwing and things like that. And I'm just so excited to watch it. I feel like I need to like run myself a bath, put it on, and just truly enjoy it for what it is.
Okay, if you do that tonight, I think I'm gonna do the same.
Fantastic.
I think this is to be enjoyed submerged in water.
I completely agree. I think prop the iPad up on the sink taps. Full bubble bath, stay in there, ignore everything else that's happening in the world, and just fully immerse ourselves in Roni.
Two words. Self-care.
Oh, what could be better?